The people of Israel had been slaves in Egypt, captives under a nation whose wealth and force of arms were greater than any before seen in the world. But then almost overnight, the people were free. They had a divine deliverer who liberated them. But at what a cost? What a cost. The nation of Egypt was ruined. The crops utterly devoured by frogs and locusts and lightning, livestock devastated by disease and hail and killed by thirst because the river Nile began to run with blood instead of water. And the people of Egypt, they fared yet worse. They were plagued by biting gnats and boils all over their bodies, terrified by days of darkness so deep it was as if they had been struck blind, awakening to a world with a terrible revelation that all of the lights of heaven were gone. And there in that unnatural night, the whole nation was slashed to the bone with grief. All the firstborn in the entire nation, slain by a hand that was as invisible as it was inescapable, as merciless as it was indiscriminate. There had been a terrible cost in freeing the people of Israel from Egypt. And the time had come. The time had come for the people to pay God back for the debt they had incurred for their freedom. They were out in the wilderness, utterly dependent upon the mercy of a God who they had just watched cut down a nation. They stood before a great high mountain, or at least it had seemed a great high mountain, before it was engulfed by an enormous pillar of smoke, erasing the mountain from their sight as God's very presence descended in stone-melting fire. Because God had freed them from slavery, the people were now subject to a contract. They were bound by this contract, and God had come to inform them of the terms. God had freed them by destroying a nation with 10 plagues. The contract had 10 conditions. What kind of terms could be terrible enough to warrant what this God had done for them? Would they be required to give burnt offerings of year-old calves or thousands of rams or tens of thousands of rivers of oil? Or would this God, who had slain the firstborn, require no lesser sacrifice than what would be unthinkable? The people waited to learn what the 10 conditions of God's contract with them would be. And when God spoke, the people heard for the first time. They heard for the first time the 10 commandments. The 10 commandments are the contract. More specifically, they are the covenant. The 10 commandments are what was placed inside of the Ark of the Covenant. That's where the covenant part of that name comes from. The 10 commandments were the contract that God placed upon the people after she freed them from slavery. And these conditions, they were so basic. They were so simple. Most of the commandments were things that you would teach to your children about how to be a good person. Don't steal. Don't hurt people. Listen to your parents. Don't tell lies about your friends. Keep your promises. That kind of thing. And the rest? The ones about how the people of Israel were bound now to behave toward God? Well, those included such harsh injunctions as, "Your day off is Saturday." These 10 commandments, they are the contract between God and the people, and the terms are so gentle. They're so mild. They're so helpful and wise. There's not even any punishments laid out for breaking the contract, as if to fail to live up to it would be its own poverty of spirit. This very God, this God who could have demanded anything from the people, What God demands is only that they should live well. God demands of them that they should live well. And what's more, God gives them the foundation for how to live a good life in the Ten Commandments. They are such a gift. They are such a sign of God's goodness and desire for our thriving. For each commandment, if followed, will enrich your life. The first commandment, do not chase after any other deities. For it was only God. It was only God who heard the cry of Israel. It was only God who broke their slave chains. They are to worship God because no other force in heaven or on earth could love the people or cherish them the way that God does. The second commandment, don't bow down and worship anything that is just a pretender to being divine. Statues of gold or piles of gems or huge carved stone monoliths or towering skyscrapers or bull markets or hedge funds. These are just dead things. They are just dead things. And if you pray to them, they cannot answer. And if you trust in them, they may or may not keep faith. So do not waste your trust or worship on dead things. The third commandment, don't misuse God's name. God is alive and listens to prayers, and whenever God's name is called, she bends her attention and draws close. That is a gift of the living God, one that it is possible to forget. It's possible to forget if the name becomes just an oath or a curse. The fourth commandment, you must rest on the day of rest. God created the heavens and the earth. The world is vast and filled with beauty and elegant mathematics to be discovered and innumerable fascinating beetles. Yet the treasures of all of creation pale in comparison to the gift that God gave us on the seventh day. The gift of rest. The Sabbath teaches us that to simply be, that is enough. We are valuable beyond measure simply on account of our being. Our value is not limited or defined by the work of our bodies, the work of our hands. That does not make us what we are, to be still. To be still and know God. That is to give up the frantic search for something, anything that we can create for ourselves, which would be worthy of the immensity of having one and only one strange and lovely turn through the years. And so God commands that never should a week go by without a day to simply be. Even the fifth commandment is wonderful, though I confess it is one that I find the hardest to believe is wise in all circumstances. Honor your parents. It could seem bitter poison to one whose parents were themselves poisonous to their children. How can it be right to honor the parenthood of one who has proven a curse to their offspring? Yet the commandment is not to obey or to praise or even to love parents, but to honor, that is, to treat them with the amount and kind of respect that they deserve. That's what honor is. Honor is treatment based upon what a person deserves. To slight someone who is wonderful, that is a dishonor because they deserve better. Conversely, to praise someone far beyond what they really deserve, that is dishonor as well. It is its own special kind of condescending shame to celebrate a person who does not deserve it. Honor your parents. That is, behave toward them in the way that is right, given their parenting. That is freedom. Do not kill, because human life is precious, and another person's life is not ours to take away. Do not commit adultery, because although the bonds of human intimacy are deep, they are as fragile as eggshells and just as hard to repair when they are broken. Do not steal, because people value the things that they possess, and to take it away from them sows seeds of violence. Do not tell hurtful lies about other people, because tearing down another leaves both victim and accuser outside of the embrace of community, no longer to be trusted. Do not covet what other people have, for it will breed only hateful envy inside of me, and my envy will tempt others to boastful pride and greed. This contract, The contract that God wrote for the people when she freed them from slavery, this covenant of how we should treat God and how we are to treat one another, it is a blessing from God to make our lives better. The Ten Commandments aren't laws to be abided by out of fear of punishment. They are a gift of wisdom to be lived into for the fullness of life. Ten Commandments aren't a straitjacket to be struggled out of. They are a cloak to wrap around ourselves to shield us from life's bitterest winds. The Ten Commandments aren't a rule book. They're more like a dance card. They are a dance card that God has filled out with all the best partners, and we can either dance God's way, or we can wind up with second-rate steps and a partner who can't help themselves but step all over our toes. If we all were just to live into this contract, to abide by the contract that God has written for us, then we would all imagine everyone with a day of rest, money toppled from its high places and no longer the object of worship, the hoarding of wealth becoming a thing of the past because no one is impressed any longer with rich men's toys, war abandoned as a barbaric tool for resolving disputes, and the love of God and the name of God alone as in heaven above as holy, and with a brotherhood and sisterhood of equality on earth below. That is the world that the Ten Commandments imagines. That is the world that God has bound herself to building. This contract is binding upon God as well. You should memorize the Ten Commandments. You should write them on your heart and know them on the top of your mind. You should memorize the Ten Commandments, and when life's crossroads bring you to a place with an opportunity to break one of them, when it might seem that it is wise to do so, make a different choice instead. And if you do, you will have made the world a better place, and you will have made your life a better one. Thanks be to God for that indescribable gift.